Welcome to The Other Discovery Show, the podcast that's not about podcasts. It's about all the other things we found out throughout the week. I'm Kirk.
And I am Zach. And it's time to explore your bodies.
No, I didn't do it. You're scaring me. I'm like, no.
Especially because last week we did the butt, so it puts us right in the danger zone when we're talking about what's next.
Now everyone just has something to fear or look forward to if Josh ever comes back on the show.
I think that just whenever he realizes that is the next level up, we're in trouble. He's gonna return.
The next level around.
Yep.
All right. So what you got, Zach? What's your first discovery this week?
My first discovery this week is another gentleman bandit. So I've been doing these a little bit. Well, yeah, it's been a couple months.
You need to make a little like theme song or something.
Gentleman Bandit. Is that our theme song? Yeah, all right, we're gonna clip that. That's gonna be it. This week's Gentleman Bandit is Vincenzo Pepino. And
Vincenzo Cucumber?
I don't know. It's spelled with an I. I don't know. My Italian's not great. I'm sorry.
It's Pepino.
Okay, sure. Pepino. Okay, I'll just start.
Pepino.
It's not that one. I'm going to go ahead and disclaimer right now. My Italian's bad. I don't know.
It's P-I-P-I-N-O.
I thought I was doing good by knowing that's Vincenzo.
It is Vincenzo. You're right with
so
that.
I thought I was doing good.
I'm sorry. You said cucumber. I'm like, his name is Vincenzo Cucumber?
Vinny the Cucumber is what they called him in jail. They did not. Okay, so this is an Italian art thief, and he is known as literally the gentleman thief. He is the first person to successfully steal from, once again, sorry, I think it's Doge's Palace, D-O-G-E Palace. And they had a ridiculous amount of very old, culturally significant art in there. So, okay, during his lifetime, he committed over 3,000 thefts at museums, galleries, banks, and private residences, 50 thefts of jewelry shops, and stole thousands of kilos of gold throughout Europe. His activities have resulted in 300 complaints to the police. He's been arrested numerous times and received 15 sentences, totaling over 25 years in prison. And let's just get into a little bit about Vincenzo, because it's wild. So he was raised fairly poor after World War II, and his family didn't have a lot of money he was hungry, basically. And so he was sitting in the back of class, and basically he started getting kind of pushed into stealing things. So when he was 8 years old, he started stealing. His first move was he was an errand boy at a bakery. And so your easy move there is you steal some baked goods. So he started doing that when he was eight. His first major theft was a 50-liter aluminum milk churn. And he literally broke it down and junked it, sold it to a junk dealer. And then he also, and the thing, we know a lot about him now because he's written numerous memoirs. He is essentially like a cult hero in Italy.
I didn't know until, you know, just you mentioned it. It feels like something super long ago.
No, he's alive right now.
Yeah, this is it's.
Yeah, he is alive right now.
Most of these, boop, 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 boop. Whatever our theme song is, gentlemen, thieves or whatever. It's usually a long time ago.
Yeah, no, he is alive right now. And so, okay, by the age of 10, he would steal croissants off tables of people at cafes. So mm-hmm. He'd just walk by and snag their croissants. And then his mother was worried, like, okay, he's stealing a bunch of stuff. And this is the most hilarious, ironic, however you want to call it. So she knew he was stealing a lot of stuff. And so she made up a ghost. So there's this ghost she calls it the golden leg. I'm not even going to try and read it in Italian. I'm not going to do it.
La gamba d'oro.
There you go. See, it's close to Spanish, so you're probably right there. It was about a ghost of a woman who had fallen in their apartment building stairwell and died after impaling herself on a nail. She said the woman was haunting.
Big nail.
Yeah, the woman was haunting the stairwell now. And so after dark, her leg would glow, and she would haunt children who came in late. So the plan was, be in bed by nighttime. That is not how that plan worked out. So Vincenzo was immediately afraid of the dark. Weird that he was afraid of a glowing woman that was going to haunt him. And so what he learned to do was climb up the side of the apartment building, so he didn't have to go in the stairwell at all.
Much safer.
Yeah, it's much safer. And he also, because he was now afraid of the dark, decided that he needed to up his stealing game because he needs to be able to do it in the daylight. So she has just built a master thief by telling him that there's a ghost.
This is how fairly good parenting can go very wrong.
And I mean, yeah, she was trying. She was like, go to bed, stop stealing croissants and go to bed. And he's like, I'm going to learn to climb the side of a building and I'm going to be a master thief. That's not on her. There was other things at play here. But his first major theft was at a hotel. He followed a tourist, and while they were distracted, he stole a bunch
touring.
Of, yeah. He stole a bunch of money out of their pocket. But he did not know that you can't just walk into a bank with a huge amount of money and not have like ID. And so he was arrested and served seven months in jail because he couldn't sign for whoever this was. He just took the money.
Interesting.
So that was the first jail stint. By the age of 15, he had become an adept climber, all because he was terrified of a golden leg ghost haunting his life.
I've actually learned about this guy now. I remember hearing about this. I think it was a Snap Judgment episode.
Oh, was it?
This guy. Yep.
Yeah. No, that makes
sense.
Years
ago, but I remember hearing about him.
So he would, and like, he had some weird things. So, okay, I guess this is when he was 15. He would go to a theater. He would set up a makeshift ticket booth at the back door of the theater and sell it just to children who couldn't afford the theater's prices. But he just did it.
He's what like, did he do? Just like,
he just set
put
up
his foot in the door and be like, I'll let you in.
He's like, hey.
He'd buy a ticket. Okay.
$1 per ticket. You want to come in?
Would he buy a ticket, go in, then go to the emergency exit, prop it open, and sell tickets so the kids could sneak in?
Basically, this is saying he climbs a window and would just let himself in.
So he wouldn't even buy a ticket.
No, he didn't. He never paid for it. He made money off this enterprise. He wasn't paying to get in. So he got married after that.
That's pretty genius. I gotta say.
So then, like I said, he became kind of a figure in Italian like lore, you know, because he had done all of these things. I read somewhere that it was almost like a compliment to have been stolen, like to have been robbed by Vincenzo.
It's like if your business or something gets tagged by Banksy,
yeah,
it's
pretty
kind
much
of a compliment. But if you get stolen by Vincenzo Pickle, then.
I'm not calling him Vincenzo Pickle. That's you. No one go on record.
Oh, yeah. He's still alive. Dang it.
Yep. He has a Facebook. That's a little spoiler, but it's awesome. He has a Facebook now where he teaches people tricks of the trade and tells them not to do it, which is like, I don't know if that's going to.
Well, I mean, that's what Mythbusters taught us. Don't try this at home. Okay. I'm going to go try that at home now.
Now I know exactly how to try it at home. You just showed me exactly how to do it. But he, part of the reason he had the gentleman bandit moniker, the gentleman thief rather, is he had a personal code of conduct where he would not use violence or blackmail. And even though he would rob jewelry stores, but he would never steal the items being repaired because he didn't want to impact the watch repair guys. He didn't want to impact anybody who their livelihood would be changed because of what he was stealing. So he wouldn't steal watch. He would steal watches that people could buy, not watches that were being repaired. So he didn't put people like in a weird place. It's a weird code of conduct, but he had one. He also stole a lot of art, and he was very considerate. He never damaged any of the artwork he stole. He was very like conscious of that. And he didn't want to leave a mess for his victims. For example, he would empty sugar bowls onto a kitchen towel instead of simply dumping the contents. So, like, if he would steal something, he would be nice about it. He's like, look, there's no mess for you to clean up. I just took it, and it's gone now. And he did become an art thief, was one of his main things. He would steal older relic-type items, and all of it was, well, pretty much all of it was around Venice. And he would ransom it, and then he would give it back. He had multiple times where he would steal things, and he would give it back when people asked for it, because he's not... I think that he just wanted to make money in a intense way. So he had a lot of different crimes he committed, just stealing stuff. And he would always do it during the day. Always do it during the day because he was always afraid of the dark. And so he would...
So even as an adult,
yes,
he was a little...
Yes, because of his fear of the dark, most of his thefts were committed during the day to the discomfort of his accomplices. Because, yeah, you think, okay, I'm going to steal something. When should I do it? Dark time, when it's dark outside. But that is the opposite of what he did. And so because he was kind of this figure, he ended up having a relationship with the police in the area. So there was a special investigation unit chief named Antonio Palmosi.
Oh, Dr. Pickle again.
Dr. Pickle?
No, I'm just saying, like, this
why
is like...
Why is he a doctor now?
This is what the cop... I don't know. Because he's good at what he does.
Doctorate in robbery.
In theft. So, like, it's you again, Mr. Pickle. I found you again, you dirty dog.
So, Palmosi would meet Vincenzo for coffee after big thefts. Because I think at some point they're like... Okay, some major art piece just went missing in the middle of the day. I think I have an idea who might have done it. And so he'd call him up for coffee, and then he would offer to go recover stuff for him. So he would go negotiate a little bit and haggle with the police officers just to like be essentially a tool for them so he could go steal stuff for them or like recover stuff. And so he would do all of this, and... It was one of those things where it does say there was no favors if he's caught. So as long as you're not caught, it is what it is. You know, there's no way to prove it. It's just this is happening. So he was commissioned for a lot of money to go steal some paintings. And he did that. He stole multiple paintings constantly. And then I talked earlier about Doge Palace. I'm sorry if that, I'm sure that's not how it's pronounced. I don't know.
Doge.
It can't be Doge, though. Can't be Doge. So he is the first person to ever steal from this place. It was literally built, I believe, in the 1500s and has since been turned into a museum. And so he was there and he would do a lot of scouting. So he went there and he scouted out how he was going to do this. He figured out what was going on. And then he went in as a tour. And then when he had a second, he separated from the tour and hid in a room. He waited till nighttime. He came out, and there was apparently like a long bridge that goes to prisons. There was guards that would pass by every 45 minutes. And as soon as the guard passed him at 2 a.m. in the morning, he left his cell and he returned and he grabbed a painting from the 1500s called Madonna col Bambino.
Where is this?
Bambino. It basically is, it's a very historically significant.
Madonna con Bambino.
There you go. But it's an L. I don't know. But he stole a very culturally significant painting. And
it looks like Mary holding a small priest? Grown person.
Is it a priest?
I don't know, but it's a little bit scary because it looks like it should be a child, but it's a grown adult.
But
I don't like it.
Basically, he is so good at what he did and he didn't trust anybody else. That the people that were working with him were like, hey, let's figure out how to do this. And he didn't want to get caught. So he's like, look, I'll do it by myself. And they're like, well, what are you going to steal? He's like, read the newspaper. So basically he had a lot of just like baller moves throughout this whole time. And so the next day the newspaper said, shock at Doge's palace, an easy, easy theft. And literally he stole a very culturally significant painting. And he also stole the jawbone of St. Anthony of Padua, which once again, you probably don't want to steal artifacts that were from saints in Italy.
Is this a skull, like a jawbone from a real person?
I think it's literally a jawbone of him.
It's a little bit of a disturbing thing that...
It is. But,
why?
But the next day, he got a phone call from Palmosi, the detective, the chief inspector for this bureau. And he's like,
Mr. Pepino, why you take this thing?
Yeah, something like that. That's paraphrased. It's not in here. But he basically said, look, I will have you watched all the time unless you take both of those back. Like, you can't do that. And so Vincenzo told him the painting would be returned within 20 days.
Within 20 days. Yeah. I love how that's a pretty good bit of time. What's he going to do with it in the 19 days before it's gone or back?
No, and I don't know because it's...
He's going to charge people to come look at
it. It's interesting because this one even says there's inconsistent stories about subsequent events, but the painting was recovered and the police held a press conference announcing an anonymous tip led to its recovery. And then one of his accomplices for this was a mobster, and that person negotiated the return of the jawbone in exchange for the release of his cousin from jail. So there was a lot of shenanigans going on here.
That's some sketchy stuff right there.
So basically then he went to prison. He was an informant for the cops. He's been busted many, many times for credit card fraud, where he would buy very expensive things with other people's credit cards. He's been popped multiple times for drug trafficking, but insists he doesn't do it.
Oh man.
He says, like, I don't mess with drugs at all. And
he's an honest guy, right?
He is. No, he basically just says that this is not true. He doesn't mess with drugs at all. I don't know. That's what he says. And he has since written multiple memoirs and books about all his experiences. People have written about him. And that is this week's Gentleman Thief.
Doop, boop, doop, boop, boop. Gentleman Thief. All right, so that brings me to we talked about your Gentleman Thief for 15 minutes, and that was an amazing story, and I have a one-sentence fact, and I feel a little bit embarrassed, but it blows my mind, because first of all, I do miss Disney very much. Disney, I miss you, if you're listening.
Who's Disney? Walt Disney? He's not listening.
he's frozen, right? I'm kidding. We know that's not true, but...
Is it though?
In the future, when he's unfrozen and he can listen to podcasts, which I'm sure he'll want to do,
this,
Mr. Disney, I miss you so much, and I like your mouse.
Phrasing.
But recently I learned. I'm gonna make a new Reddit page that just says recently I learned. Today I learned that Disney is the second largest purchaser of explosives in the United States.
Under who?
Only under the U.S. Department of Defense. Under our military.
No, I mean, that's good. I was making sure it wasn't some weird wild card in there.
No. So, I mean, there's not a lot more to this, and there is an article, but it's very short, and it just talks about that. I think it's crazy, but it is cool because every single night Disney has like fireworks shows at all of their theme parks. And I've thought, I wonder how much like innovation and stuff in firework technology has gone on, because this is one of the only places in the world that does nightly fireworks.
Yeah, no, and it's impressive. I will say that if you've seen Disney's firework display, it's something you remember.
Now, the one that I've always thought was interesting, when I started digging into Disney stuff, is they have a show at Epcot, and it's right there in the middle of the lagoon, mm-hmm. the Seven Seas Lagoon.
Did you say lagoon?
Not lejume, lagoon.
Lejume.
But because of where it's at, they can't use like black powder or whatever as a propellant to get into the sky. Mm-hmm. So they invented... It's essentially, it's air cannons that shoot the fireworks into the sky before they explode.
Hmm.
So they don't have to have all these explosives. I'm sure there's different laws about what you're allowed to have certain amount distance from people. So yeah. For them to be able to do it within that close to people, they weren't able to do those types of explosives, but they'll use air cannons, and they basically invented their own to be able to do the show that they do at Epcot.
Yeah, it's wild.
But it's crazy that Disney is second most purchaser of explosives. I don't know why that's so difficult for me to say, but they buy the second most amount of explosives in anybody in the U.S. other than the military. I love how the military is number one and Disney's number two.
Yeah, no, that's it's about as American as I can think of.
America.
Yeah.
You know what it's time for? Time for some phone calls.
Oh, we do have some phone calls for you. Okay, let's start with a return. Someone has been giving us a couple more phone calls, And I think you need to hear it, because one of our favorite things that's happened so far is we got a new theme song developed by a fan.
Yeah, and I think that if anybody is listening or watching this, and you are very good at auto-tune and then like creating music and stuff like that, let us know and I will send you this audio file, and please make me a jingle out of this, because it's great.
It's this one, right? Hey guys, oh my goodness.
Yep, that's it.
Okay, yep. So this is...
friend of the show?
Yeah, friend of the show. And you've heard him before, but here he is again.
Hey guys, oh my goodness. Thank you so much for playing my song. It was so... Oh, you have no idea what it means to me. Nobody's ever given me a chance, and now I got my big break on your podcast. Oh, thank you so much. So I took your advice, and during this time of, you know, all the quarantines and the social distancing, I decided to be creative and just, you know, kind of write a little bit more of the song. So I just really wanted to share that with you guys today. Oh, man, I'm so nervous. But here it goes, okay? It was a Tuesday morning. I checked my podcast feed. It was the PDS, exactly what I need. Funny conversation with Kirk and Zach. I laughed so hard I almost broke my back. Say yes, say yes, say yes to the PDS. I listen while I'm eating soup. I listen while I'm going poop. Say yes, say yes, say yes to the PDS. I listen while I'm watching shows. I listen while I touch my toes. Say yes, say yes, say yes to the PDS. Yes. That's all, guys. I love you. Thank you so much. Bye.
Well, that was amazing.
Yeah. It's hard to really put into words what it feels like to have people write songs about our show for us.
Yeah, and I love all of the amazing things that our listeners are doing while they're listening to our show.
Amazing is a word for it.
Like eating soup. I mean, that's great. Soup. I think that our show pairs very well with soup.
With the vast majority
of
soups.
What do you think is the best soup for a pairing for our show?
Beans.
Beans soup.
Beans soup. Very simple to make.
It goes great with the second part of that line of the song, right?
Yeah, no, I felt like that was implied as he was eating some beans soup.
And also, I'm assuming that when you're touching your toes, you're doing some workout. So this is a workout. We are a workout show. We are a...
Is there workout shows hosted by people that don't work out? Is that a thing? Because, I mean, it can be. We can fill that role. Do you want to have people that are not in shape tell you that you should go work out? Because we'll do it.
Hey, I used to work out before the gym closed.
I used to work out in like high school.
Yeah.
No, I've had moments of working out.
But thank you so much for your phone call. Thank you so much for your jingle. We love it so much. Please don't stop calling.
I love the jingle. I do want an auditive version of Say Yes to the PDS so we can just throw that out there. Periodically, we do have one more caller this week from our buddy
in the field correspondent,
our buddy KG. Keith. And I'm actually going to put this one on so I can hear it because I haven't listened to it.
Hey, what's up, Zag? What's up, Kirk? This is KG from Pop Up Filmcast, movie correspondent. I called in once before, but then you guys got super busy, and I'm pretty sure I think my second call got lost in the shuffle, but with all of us having to be stuck inside and streaming things, I figured I would throw out a couple of ideas there. I previously mentioned Killer Sofa when I was on before, but also Peanut Butter Falcon, great movie with Shia LaBeouf. Even recommended it to my mom. She said she liked it. You can take that being a positive or a negative, I guess, you know. Also featuring Shia LaBeouf, Honey Boy, which is about his time as a kid and his relationship with his father. Ready or Not is a bit of a horror film that I watched on a plane one time that was actually not too shabby to watch as well. What else have I watched? Jay and Silent Bob Reboot is over on Amazon Prime. And that's actually pretty enjoyable. I saw the Roadshow last fall when they came through with the live crowd and everything like that. And then rewatched it again. And it's not the best of their series, but it's still not too bad of a movie. Something else I watched recently, and I'm blanking out on it a little bit, but, you know, there's plenty of good stuff. I will continue to call in with recommendations. All right. Talk to you guys later. Oh, I just remembered it. Jojo Rabbit, if you can find that streaming somewhere as well. Taika Waititi's, World War II film, where he plays a very fun version of Hitler, if that's even such a thing. he actually is very fun and entertaining in that movie. It's also got Scarlett Johansson as well in it, about a young boy who is trying to be a Nazi, but finds out that his mother is housing a young Jewish girl in the crawl space of their house. So go ahead and check those movies out, and I will call in with more as we go on, as I'm the official film correspondent. Later.
Thank you to our In the Field movie correspondent, Keith, from the Pop-Up Filmcast, an amazing show that everyone needs to go check out immediately.
100%. There's a great episode of that show called The Stinkwater Trilogy.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the first times that they had a trilogy on there.
I know. And that's because we're groundbreakers.
We are groundbreakers.
Something like that.
So, Keith, because you mentioned Peanut Butter Falcon, I watched it just the other day, and it was amazing. And I cried a little bit, and it made me smile, and it made me laugh, and I loved it. And it was just a good story.
Yeah, no, I've heard a lot of good things about that, and Jojo Rabbit, honestly.
I had never heard of that one. What's that one about?
He told you in the thing. It's a kind of like a political satire, in a way, of World War II, because, yeah, I think his name's Taika Waititi.
So that's the one with the Nazis and Hitler and stuff.
And he's playing Hitler, and it's like people were kind of upset because he's doing like a Hitler movie, and it's supposed to be semi-funny, but I don't know. It's a weird thing. I've heard it's something you need to watch, like something just to check it out because just he's done something odd. So,
all right.
What can you do other than that? But yeah, thanks so much for calling in, Keith. We really appreciate it.
Looking forward to some more recommendations. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your discoveries.
So anybody who has listened for a while will know that I like baking things. And Kirk just had something I baked this week.
I didn't so much have it as I did just inhale it. And it was amazing. It was a tiramisu.
It was a tiramisu.
And I took like two bites and then I kind of blacked out. And then I woke back up and it was gone.
Yeah, that one did not last long at the house. but I saw this article on, you guessed it, Atlas Obscura.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic site. Seriously, check them out. They're not a sponsor, but if they ever wanted to be, that would be the easiest decision of my life because I love it so much. So there is someone called the King of Pie who in the early 20s, 1920s, was dealing with a crisis, which was people have ovens now. And so it's really easy to make cakes. And so people were making cakes at home. Mm-hmm. The entire putting myself in this era kind of blew my mind. Like, he's a pie mogul. Cakes are trying to take over the game. And he's like, no, we're not going to go quietly into that great night. We're going to fight back.
So this is like the TV killing the radio guy. This is a
kind of
bad version of it.
Kind of. So there's a guy who is way too serious about pie in the best way possible. The way that only a fanatic person who's going to innovate things can do it. And he decided, you know what? I'm going to do this like science, and we're going to figure out how to make the best pies in the world. And so, okay. One, for example, he once made 150 different versions of a cherry pie, and he wouldn't even call them recipes. He called them formulas. And like, he was a little snarky. At some point he said, okay, his pie fixation also meant he had the tendency to get a little high and mighty. Strauss once sniffed out, once sniffed that housewives tend to be too slipshod for scientific pie making. Like, that's a thing. That's not like a thing.
Scientific pie making.
No, but it was for him. And so he was, this is all in the 20s. And so like all the pictures on this article are black and white. And he was trying to find something that was going to change the game. And he did. He invented two things that were pretty influential. One is the chiffon pie, which is essentially you make a custard that is mixed with a meringue. So it's like really fluffy. And he apparently did it just because all the like custard pies he said were like cornstarch pudding. And at some point when he was a child, he ate too much and he threw up. So he's like, get that out of here.
Get that out of my face.
So he like made a new way to do it. And then because he made a new awesome filling, he also came up with the graham cracker crust.
Ooh.
And that is a staple.
Yes, it is.
Of pies now. And so, and I mean, just for a little context, it debuted at 35 cents a slice, or I mean, that would be $5 today, but I like the idea of 35 cents a slice, although we would all be much fatter. So not only was this guy being a tastemaker in pie, finding new ways to innovate, he also knew the value of marketing. And so he had actresses try out his new pie and everything like that. And so it was, he kind of hit it with this, and people were going and they were getting a pie again. They forgot all about cake. And this was in the 1920s. Like, things were about to happen. They had no clue, but things were about to happen in the world. But this all became a huge deal after the point, like after the fact. It became a very popular trend in general, but he was able to hold on to the secret long enough that he hit it and became the Pie King.
The king of pie.
So it's, and honestly, looking at this, I did look up a recipe and I can share that with everybody because I want to try a lime chiffon pie.
Lime chiffon. Because
look at that. It looks delicious. It looks like a key lime pie, but fluffy.
It does look like a key lime pie, but it looks also like it.
So for the final discovery of the week, and we'll have more on pie next week, but I don't want to load everybody down. What?
The final discovery yet.
Oh, you have one?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
That's so mean.
I was like,
my feelings.
I don't care about your discoveries. It's time to go. Go ahead.
He's like, I want to go home. Shut up, Kirk.
I literally thought that was the end.
I'm just messing with you. So if you haven't been living under a rock, then you have probably heard of or watched the new Netflix show.
Oh, okay. Yes.
The Netflix show that we inspired, because back in, I don't know, it was maybe in the summer of last year, Josh brought a discovery about Carol Baskins.
And about a guy trying to assassinate her.
Yeah. And so we planted the seed into this producer of a Netflix show, and he did it very fast.
Our influence is so strong. It goes back 5 years before we said it.
Yes, yes. So if you don't know what we're talking about, we inspired, what's the name of the show?
Tiger King. I wondered if you were like trying to like set up like a reveal.
No, I was basically waiting for you to say the
name of the show. Yeah, it's called Tiger King.
I had Joe Exotic in my brain. I'm like, that's not the name of the show. That's the name of the guy.
He does stick in your brain though.
Yes, so we inspired the Netflix phenomenon that is Tiger King. And I just want to say, you're welcome.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't watched this, yeah, there's trigger warnings. It's a lot about weird adultery, murder, cults, tiger violence. They're like, yeah, that sounds insane. That's not even barely scratching the surface. We won't spoiler anything because it really is a wild ride to watch this show.
I'm not kidding. Like, I didn't want to watch it because, I don't know, I think deep inside of me there's a hipster in there, and he's like, everyone's doing this, I ain't going to do that. And everyone was watching it. I'm like, I already know that story. We talked about it on the other Discovery show one time. And then me and Zach didn't have any. We'd watch The Office every single day, and we're like, hey, let's watch one episode of this show. And we were like, what did we just watch?
Every episode is mind-blowingly insane.
It's. I think I heard it. I heard one of the best descriptions of the show, which is it's like 12 dumpster fires going off at the same time.
Yeah.
And as soon as you think one's going to die down, another one just like erupts. And it's just like, you can't stop watching it. And you're like, how is this, any of this real?
Seriously, if someone wrote this in fiction, people would say it's contrived and terrible, but it is real and you should check it out.
It's an amazing show. It's insane. Really is. And also before we go, I wanted to talk about our podcast Discovery Club, and mm-hmm. I'm going to start bringing our favorite discovery every week that we have shared or someone else has shared in the podcast Discovery Club. I'm going to take the credit for this one. I found this one. So this is our daily disco.
Of course, this is the one you're going to do. Okay.
Why? Have you read this one?
No, I just see the the tagline. It's not like I don't know what's going to happen.
It's just such a great story.
Mm-hmm. It's a story.
So I found a Vice
article.
There's
a Reese's ad.
Dang
it. That's terrible.
I found an article on Vice.com that it was about how a plane.
No, read the slug now.
I got to read the title.
Yeah.
I can't even.
Yeah, you can. You can do that. I believe in you.
Anus horribilis. Horribilis? Horribilis.
Yep. Horribilis.
A year ago today, someone did a poop. They didn't say poop. So bad that it grounded a plane. And dang it. When this was written, it was the 1 year anniversary of a time that, long story short, I've read the article. It is funny. It is written very well. And it is a funny article. I mean, it's a Vice article. It's silly. But yeah, there was a plane and a lot of the passengers started complaining that there was really bad smells and they thought there was like a chemical weapon on board or something like that. So they literally turned the plane around and landed, and come to find out, one of the passengers had lit up that bathroom so bad that it stank the whole plane up to the point where they ended up having to land the plane.
That's serious. And like, I get it. Sometimes like you're in the plane, like your stomach gets upset, but that is a worst case scenario for me. I feel like I barely fit in those bathrooms. I have to duck down to like be in it, and just, I would not feel comfortable going to the bathroom in an airplane like that. It would have to be a serious emergency situation.
I've never gone number two in a plane before.
I haven't either.
I've been in a lot of planes and I've never gone number two in a plane.
I want to never have to. I don't enjoy being in a plane.
After
bathroom.
Reading this article, I'm even more terrified to ever go to the bathroom in a plane because I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. No, I get that. You need at least like courtesy flush three or four times. It's fine. It just shoots out of the plane, right? Just like launches it.
Yeah, it just shoots it out of the plane. And
there's a catapult attached to the side of a plane. And when you push the flush, it just right out.
Look out below. All right. On that note, I think that'll do it for this week's The Other Discovery Show. If you want to find some amazing and very fun discoveries like that one, join us over at the Podcast Discovery Club on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter. We share the same articles on Twitter as we do on Facebook because we know that some people are like, I'm not on Facebook, but I'm on Twitter, or I'm not on Twitter, but I'm on Facebook. So we do both. We do have an Instagram. We don't really know what to do on there yet. We have a few pictures. We're working on that. But yeah, follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Join the group on Facebook. Join the conversation. And also, we do live stream this every week over on our YouTube channel. The YouTube channel will be in the show notes. Join us next week. Let us know what you think. What are some discoveries that you've found? Let us know in the chat.
Just say whatever you want. It's really fine. We just want to talk to you. That's why we started live streaming, so we could talk to you while we're doing this. We felt like podcasting was an impersonal experience with the people who listen.
Yeah, we just kind of record and throw it out into the ether, and it's just gone. And people listen to it, but it's like, we don't know you. We want to know you. We want to say hi.
We do. We want to know you.
So, yeah, let us know. And also, just like our friend Keith and our other friend that we don't know your name. You can call the Discovery Hotline. That will be in the show notes as well. Call that number. Leave us a message. If you found out something amazing, let us know. Or if you just got something to say about the show, call the hotline.
For anybody who is just listening and doesn't want to look at the show notes, the hotline number is 813-708-9118. That's the Disco Hotline. We will have you on the show. You're talking straight to us, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, we would. So, guys, that brings us to our last discovery. Zach, what amazing band do you have to tell us about this week?
This one actually kind of blew my mind. This was an episode that we recorded and is now gone, so I'm going to bring it up again. And his name is Bruce Sedano. He was married to Donna Summer and wrote a lot of music for her in the 80s. His daughter and son-in-law are Johnny Swim.
Johnny Swim?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He wrote songs for Michael Jackson.
And you interviewed this guy on Creators Cove?
Yeah, he wrote songs for Reba McEntire. He's been around. He's done crazy stuff, and his name is Bruce Sedano. He's a great guy. And as always, if you'd like to find out more about it, I talked to him on Creators Cove. So you can look that up, and you can hear my conversation with him.
That's awesome.
The song is called She's With Him. He has been releasing a lot more music recently. So check out his social media profiles, and you can see his newest stuff that's out right now.
All right, guys. And remember, say yes. Say yes. Say yes to the BDS.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll find yourself a new love. Sorry for what you've gone and done. I'm feeling sorry for myself right now. After all, I know you're hurt, but hey, you ain't the only one. Yes, my heart's been broken. You blew up our world and I've been devastated. Now we're swimming in the whirlpool of a storm, and it's the one that you created. It's what you made it. And I don't wanna let you go, but I can't take you back. I don't wanna let you go, but I know where you're. It's with him. So what am I supposed to do now? After 17 years, all thrown out the window. Tears. You got swept up in the fever, and the passion of the fire overtook you. Then you fell so far away that there was nothing left for me to even rescue. Now there's no way to. And I don't wanna let you go.
podcast from the Podfix Network.